You're listening to the Boyer Lectures on Big Ideas on ABC Radio National. And each week, to follow the lecture, we're inviting a couple of people deeply engaged in the issues to chew over some of the ideas presented by Professor Glyn Davis. Today, two people passionate about teaching and learning. Mari Person is a board member of Skills Australia, an independent body set up to advise government on tertiary education skills and training. She's also the former Deputy Director General of TAFE and Community Education in New South Wales, where she was responsible for the largest vocational training organisation in Australia. Mari Person, welcome to Big Ideas on ABC Radio National.
Thank you, Peter.
Also joining us is Associate Professor Mahfouz Aziz from the University of South Australia. He's an engineer and he's also the winner of the Prime Minister's Award for the Australian University Teacher of the Year. Professor Mahfouz Aziz, welcome to you.
Thank you, Peter.
Mahfouz Aziz, you should know the answer to this question. What makes a good teacher?
Well, I guess we have to be a perpetual student, keep on learning for life. And being an engineer, that's more so, because technology is advancing at such a rapid pace that we have to keep on learning. And then perhaps knowing where the students are at, how they are going, and continuously assessing and adjusting the pace and modes of teaching and learning, I think is what it takes to be a good teacher.
Mari Person, would you add to that?
Look, I agree, of course, but I think Professor Davis said it very well when he talked about stimulating and provoking, using technology as a tool, not necessarily as a replacement. I think I would also add a good teacher has to be very adaptable. If you're teaching in TAFE, one day you might be teaching communication to a group of welders and you need to get their attention. The next day you might be teaching communication to a group of advanced diploma students in marketing. So I'd add adaptability as well as enthusiasm, passion and so on.
In my own university experience, the quality of teaching was varied, to say the best, and it was clear that some lecturers had never had much training in teaching itself. Regardless of how learned they were in their field, they weren't necessarily very good at communicating. Is that still the case, Mari Person, or do university and higher education teachers now get better training in the process of actual teaching?
I trained as a teacher, and I think probably the most valuable part of my diploma of education was when one of the senior lecturers came out and actually showed me how to deal with a group of 25-year-old secondary school boys, not much younger than myself. So I think that the emphasis is more on practice and demonstration, and I think that's a good move. I think that has become better, certainly in the areas that I've worked.
Mahfouz Aziz, I think you did an extra course to make yourself a better teacher.
Yes, basically I'm an engineer and I have a bachelor's degree, a master's degree in engineering and then a PhD. But I also did a graduate certificate in higher education and I have found it extremely useful. But nevertheless, the universities also have various professional development programs throughout the year, which help deal with different teaching scenarios, different kind of students and feedback and all of those issues. So I think the higher education sector, the universities in particular, are taking a greater interest in staff training on an ongoing basis, which is very good, I think.
One of the big questions that Professor Glyn Davis raises in his lecture is about how we learn, whether it's better to take a hands-on, practical approach, learning by doing, as it were, or whether a more theoretical route is just as valid, understanding fundamental principles first before seeking to do any applying of them. And he says it's a debate that goes back to ancient Greece. Mari Person, is this a valid distinction between these two things?
The practical and the theoretical involved in all teaching. Some is weighted more than others. It depends, I think, on the occupation. We don't have in a training package, when you teach a plumber. You don't specifically teach gravity, but I think a plumber needs to understand the basic theory of gravity.
Got to understand why the water goes down the plug hole.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think it's really important. What I would also add, Professor Davis's old alma mater was UNSW, which was formed out of Sydney Tech, and the motto is Manu e Mente, hand and mind. So I think the principle is accepted in the higher ed sector and the tertiary sector in general.
And I guess, Professor Mahfouzaz, is that in engineering you really do have to combine these two things?
Well, we really have to combine these two things, and I think it is about finding the right balance between the two. So as the students go through some theoretical concept development, they also go to the laboratory to test those concepts and reinforce those concepts. Students ultimately have to be able to design systems that work, design and test them and validate them.
This is Big Ideas on ABC Radio National. As a follow-on to the second Boyer lecture by Professor Glyn Davis, we're talking about some of the issues raised in his lecture, issues around teaching and learning, with Associate Professor Mahfouz Aziz from the University of South Australia and Dr. Mari Person, who is from Skills Australia. Let's talk about the teaching style in universities itself. The most common form of delivering knowledge, as Glyn Davis says in his lecture, is in fact a lecture. But I wonder if a lecture is the best way to get ideas and information across.
Well, if you only rely on lectures, I think you're going to end up in disaster, to summarize this in one sentence. What you need, as Professor Davis has rightly pointed out, you need a blend of different learning activities, not only to suit different learning styles of different students, but also to provide choice, to provide flexibility. And I think not only lectures, the tutorials, the interactions, the peer learning, the peer assessment in the university, as well as in the virtual environment, all of this together will give a rich experience to students.
But Mari Person, there's a danger, isn't there, that this will be driven more by economics than by pedagogy. The move online will be driven by finding the cheapest way to deliver information or teaching to the largest number of students.
Look, I think that is a concern, but as Professor Davis pointed out, teaching and learning is a human interaction, and I think we need to be wary of exactly that development. But good teachers and most teachers understand the fundamental nature of the relationship between the student and the teacher. And in terms of lecture rooms, I think learning is evolving beyond classrooms and taking the point. The trick is to take advantage of technology, I suppose.
In what way?
Well, to use it so that particularly for Indigenous students in rural and remote areas, for those students in TAFE, around 90% are part-time, so that they can actually use the technology, use the web as a learning tool, but not as a replacement.
Yeah, I mean, and it often suits some mature age students who may be working and studying in the evenings. They don't actually want to come onto campus at all, I guess.
Well, I think at the end of the day, most students really enjoy their campus experience. But whether it's 2 days a week or 2 weeks a year, they are still able to participate in the learning experience. And the average age of a TAFE student is about 31. So they do have very full and rich lives outside of their learning and are mostly working.
Mahfouzaz, is how important is that classroom interaction, you know, the bringing of students together with their teachers?
It is extremely important, in my opinion. It cannot really replace the real face-to-face interaction, not only with the lecturers, but also with their peers, the rigorous debates and discussions that happens in the classroom. You cannot simply, I think, replace that with a virtual experience or online experience.
So you don't think we're going to end up with a virtual university where everyone learns from a terminal in their own home or what have you?
For some category of students who are living in remote areas, who don't perhaps have much choice and do not get to a university, cannot get to a university campus, or have family and work commitments, for them, perhaps this online or virtual environment is giving them the opportunity to access higher education. So it's a question of accessing higher education for those people, as opposed to not getting any access to higher education. But I think even those students would benefit from occasional campus experience and interaction. But to answer your question, I don't think, you know, we shall see a situation soon in the future, at least, where universities or classrooms are going to be replaced fully by virtual environments.
The other side of this coin is that we can all now sample teaching from universities around the world. Some of the world's top universities put their lectures online. Mari Person, does that, do you think that sort of acts as a form of a spur to lift the game, lift the bar in the quality of teaching?
Absolutely. There's nothing like having examples of best practice to make a teacher try to achieve for excellence. So I think the other benefits of the web, though, is being able to contact a lecturer or a teacher via, you know, a dedicated chat line. Being able to communicate outside of the classroom is very important as well.
The responses that we've had online to the first lecture when it was broadcast, many of them came from, in fact, disaffected university staff, teachers who feel overburdened by the demands on them, by the fact that we've seen dramatically increasing student-staff ratios and that sort of thing, that they're now expected, their departments are expected to pay their own way. I mean, do we actually value teachers enough and give them enough resources, Mafus Aziz?
Yeah, well, this is always a very difficult question to answer. And as you have pointed out, many of the staff responses you have received to this lecture has been overwhelmingly perhaps additional burden or extra burden. And these are issues I think all universities are having to deal with. And there is increasing accountability, as you would know, on different indicators of performance. And performance is now tied with funding as well.
So you mean staff, university staff or TAFE staff are now constantly evaluated and expected to meet certain benchmarks and so on?
Yes, this is increasingly becoming the norm. Staff are expected to perform well in their teaching, in their research, and in all the areas that they are responsible for, including admin as well, in cases where academics are involved in administration. And there is also national benchmarks, I think, emerging with the establishment of TEXA and other measures, whereby institutions will have to really show high performance, levels of performance in teaching.
Mari Person, do you think teachers get enough support? And I'd note along the way that TAFE teachers are paid at much lower rates than university teachers, even though TAFE teachers often deal with the students who need the most intensive support, who come from more disadvantaged backgrounds, perhaps.
Yes, look, I don't think you would ever want to pay a teacher less. But everybody in every profession is working harder. And I don't think teachers are an exception. The salient point is to make sure that their work is valued, whether it be through pay, whether it be through recognition. A lot of TAFE teachers have access to further education, which the organisation will pay for. And I think that shows the value that they add to the organisation. But I do think it's the 60-20-20 rule. 20% will take every challenge and relish it. 20% will be unhappy, and 60 will vary depending on, you know, personal circumstances.
There's also the overall social context, I suppose, and whether as a society we value teachers enough.
Oh, I think that we see probably more so in our schools the value that the community places on teachers. But certainly, having been a TAFE teacher and having had students talk about how teachers have transformed their lives, certainly the community values their access to an education, particularly if they come from a disadvantaged background.
And Mahfouz Aziz, you now also get those feedback forms from students at the end of every semester. They fill in a form and they evaluate you as a teacher. Is that a useful exercise?
For me personally, it has been, and for many of my colleagues, actually, it has been a very useful exercise because we get to know how students see not only my teaching, but the course and their course experience as a whole. And sometimes they come up with, they give us good feedback, which we then use to improve areas that needs improvement. So I, in fact, look forward to receiving feedback on those evaluations from students, indeed.
Mahfouz Aziz and Mari Person, thank you both for joining us on Big Ideas to discuss Glyn Davis's Boyer Lecture.
Thank you, Peter.
Mahfouz Aziz is an Associate Professor in the Division of Information Technology, Engineering and the Environment at the University of South Australia and the winner of the Prime Minister's Award for Australian University Teacher of the Year. Mari Person is a board member with the independent government advisory body Skills Australia and the former Deputy Director of New South Wales TAFE. And as I mentioned in that discussion, not all of the listeners to the first Boyer Lecture last week shared Professor Glyn Davis's positive take on the contemporary university. Elizabeth wrote that her four children have struggled through university rather than enjoyed it. She says the ivory towers are fun for the rich, but mind-bogglingly stressful for underfunded students. Several academics wrote in with complaints, ranging from governmental financial exploitation of overseas students to the deteriorating quality of the higher education model and the resulting lack of job satisfaction for staff. Also mentioned was the end of tenured positions, with much teaching now done by contract staff, and questions were raised about the idea that learning is a commodity. Jonathan says not everyone is suited to a university education, and a culture that encourages so many people to go to university isn't helpful. Another listener wants to know if, in the age of the business model, universities still nurture older members of the faculty, who offer a special kind of generosity, contributing their advice and ideas. Lane wanted less Erasmus and more substance, and there were two contributors who pointed out that the chairman of the ABC board, Maurice Newman, erred in saying that all our post-war prime ministers had gone to university, Paul Keating being the most famous autodidact. To have your say, go to the website at abc.net.au/rn/Boyer Lectures and click the Add Your Comment tag on today's lecture. The Boyers continue next week at this time when Professor Glyn Davis turns his attention to research in our universities. Is research just the academic excuse for idleness? The Boyer Lectures are produced by Suzanne Donisthorpe, technical production by Peter Jackson and Paul Penton. I'm Peter Mayers.